97.9 FM, WCHL, and chapelboro.com present The Art of Potential, an illuminating talk show dedicated to getting your community educated, hired, and inspired. The Art of Potential combines real-world knowledge and expertise aimed at helping our community reach their full potential. Now, The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Hi, this is Kristen Heemstra. Welcome to the Art of Potential show. We have an amazing show in store for you today. Very, very interesting show. We are going to be talking about how to raise emotionally healthy children. My guest today is Nadia Vasu. She is a licensed clinical social worker. She has 15 years of experience doing this. She works with children, adolescents, and their families, including adults. Welcome, Nadia.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
So glad to have you here. So let's just talk in general. What is emotional, what is it to be emotionally healthy? What does that look like?
Well, when you think of emotional health, you tend to think a word that comes to mind is mental health, of course.
Yeah.
And our emotions are both our thoughts, our feelings, and our behaviors. And I like to take that a step further and to also incorporate not just your emotions, but also, physiologically, your body as well. I mean, it's the whole person, not just your mind per se.
Right.
And I think that's very important to remember, especially with people, because a lot of times when we are in distress, we can have a headache or a stomach ache that can come into play that is telling us, hey, something's not right.
Right. Like a stress headache or, yes. And I remember when I was little and didn't want to go to school, I always had a stomach ache. That was my chosen MO.
And a lot of times, that's something for me to figure out. And a lot of times as a clinician, when working with children, I'll always want to make sure that we have, a medical, workup.
Yeah.
That's important.
No, it absolutely is. And I see that just from my own work as a school counselor. It's kind of, when you get older, you just kind of have different ways of manifesting whatever emotional stuff is going with you, often on a physical level. So that makes total sense. So what does it mean then to be emotionally healthy? What does that look like?
I think it boils down to self-care. And, and that can look very different in very different people across cultures.
Interesting.
And that's
That makes sense. I just never thought of it that way, but that totally makes sense.
So for some people, religion is a way to take care of ourselves. But let me just back up, being emotionally healthy can also, learning to take care of yourself. That's not something that's really taught to us.
Right.
Sometimes it can be modeled to us by the people in our lives, our parents, our aunts and uncles, our friends.
So let's just stop because I want to know this from my own. Like I'm thinking about my own family, so I'm using you right now as my own therapy session. So there you go.
That's great.
So how would I demonstrate to my children how to take care of themselves? Like, or how should I be taking care of myself to teach them that that's an okay thing to do?
You do a lot of things, just talking, to you and getting to know you. You've got a lot of things on your plate. And I can imagine, coming home at the end of the day, it's like, whoa, I need some just me time. And to let your kids know that, hey, mommy's going to go have 15, 30 minutes to just take a bath, just to be quiet,
So that makes
mindfulness,
sense. Yeah,
and for them to see that you're modeling to them to say, I just need some calm down time, and to also for them to respect that boundary.
Yeah, instead of mom,
right, because then that just ups your ante in terms of your ability to be emotionally available to them.
Right.
So
it's almost like a recharge time. So building in some type of and honestly, I do that when I come home. I kind of, because otherwise I don't have anything. I'm depleted, and then they get nothing, and and I'm grumpy, and that doesn't build for a healthy family dynamic.
And a lot of my work as a clinician, you know, I work with the families. And when I work with specifically children, I always start out with saying, I'm going to work with the family. I'm not just going to work with your child. It's a whole family system approach. And I do talk about this, you know, you do have to model, you know, how do you take care of yourself? And that can be a variety of ways. You know, when things are out of flux, you know, when there's some kind of distress, and we can get into this later about how you see those levels of distress manifest themselves. But, you know, playing, having fun, refueling that emotional tank is how... That's what emotionally healthy, I think that's what, if I had to write a prescription, that's what I would say. How do you refuel your tank? And when I work with people, it's like, what are those things that make you feel happy inside? A lot of times when we get to adults, we've kind of lost that. It's like we've got to do work. We've got to make food. We've got to make sure the kids are dressed. And you know, when I look at the little ones and especially the teenagers, I'm like, remember this moment. Remember that how excited you were on that football field. Or remember how you felt reading that poem that you created. Don't lose that, because those happiness moments are how we take care of ourselves or how we are emotionally healthy. It's a balance, you know.
It is, but what a great way to do it. Like, it's almost like you're pinning it on your mental bulletin board. Like, this is my ribbon moment. Like, I need to remember this forever and ever.
Oh, and one more thing. Exercise.
Yeah.
Even if
crazy how that is.
But it just, and it goes back to, you know, emotional health is just not just our thoughts, but also, you know, our body. And I like to speak and educate people about mental health and try to help remove the stigma about it. And one of the things I will often say is, you know, it's okay for us. We have to get our eyes checked.
You know,
I wear contacts.
Yes, I can't you know? See without my glasses.
We go to the doctor. You know, we go to the dentist. But what about our emotions? They play such a big role. And a lot of it we don't understand in terms of the brain, how it works. But why is it not okay to get an emotional checkup?
No, it is. And I like that analogy, because sometimes our emotions are off base, just like our eyesight is off base and we need some type of corrective measure. And yes, you know, medication's definitely out there. It's not my favorite way to correct emotional things, but sometimes it's absolutely necessary. But it is good to have somebody say, you know, try this new emotional exercise or a new reframing of looking at this differently.
And, well, we can get into this later, but, you know, when learning to how to, if we've had some kind of, we have trouble regulating our emotions, it takes practice. It's not something that's magically.
It takes mindfulness.
There you go, mindfulness.
It takes a lot of mindfulness.
Big topic. But, you know, with medication, sometimes there's this just huge, like, oh no, I'm weak because I have to take a medication. And sometimes when we look at it, especially with children, they're having so many areas of, I know we've kind of gone off track, but sometimes low self-esteem, they have no friends, they feel like a failure. And you have to kind of take that into, you know, account. But it's just like, you know, if you needed glasses to see and to drive, you would need that. But for some reason, if you need medication for, you know, say anxiety or looking at difficulty focusing or paying attention, it's like a huge no-no versus, you know, hey, that's how I like to explain it to kids. Yeah. You know, sometimes we need glasses to see. Yeah. Sometimes we need help learning how to focus.
No, and that makes total sense. It really does, and it helps. It just helps everybody to have a good place to come from, to start your day, to start your week, to start your life, just a healthy place. I tell you what, let's take a break real quick, and when we come back, we are going to continue our conversation. You are listening to The Art of Potential with Kristen Heemstra.
You're listening to The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra. You are listening to The Art of Potential show, and I am talking with therapist Nadia Vasu. We are talking about how to raise emotionally healthy children. So, Nadia, what are some of the red flags that you would look to see in a child that is not emotionally healthy?
Going back to the whole, you know, mind-body connection, sleep, sleeping more, sleeping less, eating more, eating less as well. A big one is irritability, and that's kind of hard to define. And you can see it in, and we tend to see that a lot in younger children. Sometimes irritability in teenagers and adolescents is just part
of— Expected, yes.
Exactly. If you see a lot of just withdrawal, like you were mentioning earlier, just focusing on one activity or results in, you know, going to TV shows or going into their devices.
Which is natural to a certain degree. And I want to be careful about that. I'm talking about like a constant thing. Like it's in the morning with breakfast. Then it's after breakfast. Then, I mean, you're looking at kids who are not, there's other children around and they still, and these are young kids, and they still have no interest in playing with other children.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, like, all kids are interested in technology. I don't want to make it.
Exactly.
Whole society is, no, not at all.
And a big one, especially with school, I would say, is the difficulty concentrating. Yep. And that can lead people going off in all different kinds of directions in terms of what does that mean. But really, it can boil down to something's not right in terms of how the child's thinking and feeling inside.
Okay. So if you have a child who is more irritable than they have been. You know, there's different, obviously our children are born with different dispositions and some children are just, you know, have a more irritable temperament than others. And so you're looking for a change, I guess, in that.
Absolutely.
So a change in eating. I'm not interested in food, or I'm way more interested in food than I should be. Change in sleeping habits. So it sounds like the same things you'd look for in an adult. Yeah.
Yeah, it you want to look at, you know, the duration, the intensity of the change. You know, yes, children are dynamic. They are constantly changing. And that's the problem sometimes, you know, clinicians that work with children have to deal with is it, what are we looking at right now? We can't just take a snapshot of that child because developmentally and cognitively, they are growing every day. And that, you know, sometimes I get that question, you know, what happened this past week? A child can't answer that. They're right here and right now in that session is where you need to be with them and where you need to help them process their feelings and help them, you know.
And that, it, I mean, it's a bad analogy, but it's kind of like asking a dog what happened this week. They're like, really? I'm here with you now. What do we need to talk about?
Exactly.
Time takes a while to understand.
So, I go exactly what you said, a drastic change. And if you ever have any, you know, concerns, act on those concerns. You, as the parent or the guardian, you know your child the best. If you do have a concern, ask, you know—
call somebody.
somebody and just say, hey, you know, bounce it off, you know, them, get some feedback.
And it doesn't necessarily need to be a family member. I just want to say that because you're better off, I think, going to someone professional sometimes than someone in your family because
they provide an objective place.
An objective opinion.
Yes.
Family has biases.
Absolutely.
Loving biases.
Absolutely.
Yes. All right. So let's, for people who are very concerned, and I do think this should be, in my opinion, having worked in education and worked with teenagers for over a decade, raising an emotionally healthy child, in my opinion, is more important than raising an academically successful child or a child who excels in anything, academics, music, anything like that, because your emotions are your undergirding. They are the framework on which you will build your life. And it's great your child can do calculus at five, but really what they need to be able to do is interact because they're going to be alone doing calculus, but they'll be alone if they haven't learned how to manage some of those nuances. So what is your advice for raising emotionally healthy children?
If you're familiar with Mr. Fred Rogers.
Yeah. Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
He has a wonderful quote.
Sorry.
He has a wonderful quote that he begins, he says that before a child knows their ABCs and 1, 2, 3s, they need to know how to play. And play is a child's work. And we are seeing more and more focus on academics.
Totally.
On
even your toys are supposed to teach you to be more intelligent. Baby Mozart, you're supposed to be a genius, you know, 6 months.
And that really concerns me. Absolutely. It really concerns me. A child needs to play. And you're inundated on Facebook with, oh, my child can count to 20
yes.
at the age of 2 or
yeah.
count to 50 at the age of 2. And yeah. it's like, you know, we look at, you know, IQ, emotional, the quotient, and then Daniel Goldman has brought into the attention of this concept of emotional intelligence.
Yep, very much
which,
so.
Yes, going back to exactly what you said, an ability to problem solve, an ability to work with others predicts more your success later in life than the higher your IQ is.
Yeah.
Your ability to read each other, read somebody's emotions, understand where they're coming from, work together as a team in order to get a project done. Your ability to say, you know what, I'm frustrated. I can't handle this anymore, and to back off. That all goes into emotional intelligence. Understanding another's point of view, that, you know, that is important. Empathy, and that speaks... That's
so
a very...
Yeah, how do you teach a child empathy? Because naturally, they are predispositioned to see things from their own point of view. And that's a natural way of, you know, they are the center of the universe besides their parents. But, you know, that's naturally how they're programmed to be. So how do you teach that?
Well, when working with little ones, a lot of it comes down to help coaching the parents in saying, you know... How do you think that child might feel right now? Or you modeling to them, especially for a younger child that's just learning emotions, to help them identify what it is.
Because so
what,
give them words.
Exactly. Because okay. what we feel inside physiologically, right. it could be the way we feel, say anxiety, mm-hmm. differs from person to person.
Right.
For me, per se, my stomach gets tied up in knots. Some person might flush and get red, but those are all physiologic. Those things happen first.
Right.
Then our brain catches up and says, "Hey, no, that's anxiety." Or sometimes,
so it names it.
Right. So as parents, or it's help giving them words mm-hmm. and to describe how they feel. A lot of times, especially with anger, everything gets lumped into anger, frustration,
yeah.
sadness, and it all explodes with anger. Another thing, going back to Mr. Rogers, he has this wonderful song that he sings, "What do you do with the mad that you feel?" And that is, how do we teach kids to deal with the yucky feelings that they
right.
have? But then that also kind of carries over to an awareness that other people have these feelings. And developmentally, that will happen. You know, typically around third grade level, the peers become even more important.
Right.
And so that progresses nicely. And they have to kind of learn how to, that give and take of relationships. But they first learn it in the family.
Yeah, and they see their parents role model it. You are listening to the Art of Potential show. We're taking a break. We're about to take a break. And when we come back, we are going to be talking more about how to raise emotionally healthy children.
Do you love keeping up with all the latest news and entertainment in Chapel Hill and Carrboro?
Yes!
Well, look no further. The Chapelboro 2.0 app is here. All of your favorite news, sports, columns, scene around town photo galleries, and of course, streaming WCHL 97.9 live. Already have the old Chapelboro app? No sweat. Visit chapelboro.com today to follow the instructions to install the new one. Out with the old and in with the new. It's as simple as that. Visit chapelboro.com today.
You're listening to The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra. You are listening to The Art of Potential show, and we are talking about how to raise emotionally healthy children. I have the most wonderful guest with me, Nadia Vesu. She's an expert on this. So, Nadia, one of the things we touched on, which, and as you mentioned, Daniel Goldman's book, Emotional Intelligence. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Really got into was the ability to empathize and to, and I do see that also being an issue with adults, that adults, yes, you know, aren't necessarily great at empathy either. So my question is, what is the value of empathy? How does it play out, and how do we get more of it in our kids and in our lives? And, you know, that's not a big question at all, is it?
You know, sometimes I will see a lot of kids that come to me because they're in some level of distress, and a lot of it because they can they have so much emotional awareness and they can empathize too much with other people.
Yep.
And it causes them extreme levels of anxiety. And so a lot of it is helping them decrease that the emotional intensity they feel.
That's a really good point. So they're almost too connected to other people's emotions.
Versus themselves.
Right.
And saying, okay, how do I take care of myself? I'm so focused on, you know, oh, Miss Nadia looks stressed. Oh, what did I do to create that? The fact that Miss Nadia is stressed? No, that's not the case. And one of the beautiful things about therapy is that I can use that, especially with children, is they bring that in and then I help them process that. Building empathy is something that you lay a foundation. You help them think about how other people might feel. It's just trying to take the other person's point of view and also helping others, modeling that. Somebody falls down. Hey, can I help you up? It's very, what are other some ideas? Volunteering. Spending time together, family dinners, talking about each other's days so that the kids know that every single person in that family is important and their voice is important and it to be heard within the family.
I love that because you do see a lot of child-centered families. And I do think our society has moved to a child-centered model. And I'm sure it's always been there in some undercurrent. But the child then becomes the driver of the ship when really the adult should be driving the ship.
And it's okay. It should be that child say, hey, mommy, how was your day?
Absolutely.
And that, I mean, that goes, you know, I'm going to back up for a second in terms of how we are as parents. Number one, I always say when people come in, I say, how are you? Number one, to be a parent, what is your emotional health? How do you take care of yourself? Are you in a good place? Do you need to take some time? And then number two comes the relationship you have with your partner. If you have a partner, sometimes you might be alone and that creates different stressors.
Absolutely.
But that comes second. And then thirdly is your role as the parent. So for, you know, the couple to also model back to each other that empathy, how was your day? Talk to me about that. What are some of the struggles? What were some of the conflicts you have? How did you resolve that? You know, a lot of times you say, oh, it's okay for kids to see, you know, some kind of level of conflict. Go into that. But they also need to see the resolution of that and how that.
That's how they learn. Totally. And also how they learn that their parents are separate, but, you know, working as a team.
Yeah, we get this, you know, over-focus on grades or on, you know.
Hyper-focus.
Yes, and that can create a lot of, I see as anxiety in kids.
It's not just anxiety. It can, frankly, I've seen it destroy any, you know, you just won't have a relationship with your child if that's what you tell them is the most important part about them.
And they won't talk to you about the things that are bothering them when they need to.
Yeah, no, they won't.
And you ruin, But going back to, like, what are the things that make you happy? You know, the things that, that kids tend to gravitate towards as little ones, the things that they kind of excel at.
Yep.
And if we start that hyper-focus so young, it can kind of destroy it.
Yeah. No, you do. You see that. Kids burning out.
Yeah.
And they're children. But, okay, so one of the things that the other part of this, because in my experience, when kids do not have the appropriate empathetic response set up, meaning they're not able to see another person's point of view, they're not able to see outside of their own opinions, they overvalue their opinions, you end up in situations where you can get bullying mentalities. And bullies are people really who just think that I'm going to say that again. They overvalue what they think. They think it's okay to make fun of other people. They like the, you know, they like the power they feel in that. And I don't know.
The power struggle. There's a power differential that happens with bullying. They've somehow, a lot of times, it's been modeled for them, the aggressive behavior.
Right. Which I want to actually, if you know you are not emotionally healthy, or if you know that you are an aggressive person, and you're okay with that, my advice would just be to check it out, because you're going to raise children who are very similar to you in that regard. Because a nut does not fall far from the tree. It really doesn't. And you're going to create the thing that, you know, you may or may not want.
Yeah, and that raises a good point with therapy. You know, sometimes I'll have people come in saying, yeah, I just want to feel better. Well, therapy is not all... It's a process, and some of it is quite painful. And, you know, our job as therapists is to not give you, it's to help guide you to places. I like to say, create those aha moments, those insightful moments. And as parents, too, we need to be self-aware.
Yes.
We need to look at ourselves and say, okay, what am I doing? Or what could, you know, we're not perfect. And parenting does not come with a book. I mean, this is a very big and stressful job at times, and a very rewarding job.
Right.
But at times you can feel just lost. But yes, it goes into that whole emotionally checking in with yourself, saying, okay, where am I? How do I feel? And before you react to something, take 10 seconds, calm down. The more we talk sometimes, especially when we're in a place when we're responding to our child, if we can take 10 seconds to just breathe, calm down, gather our thoughts, and then speak as few words as possible to our child.
That's the best of everybody's advice.
But that also, you know, goes back to just mindfulness.
Let me have a minute.
Right. And get the teenagers who won't let you have that minute. They want to know why now.
And that brings up a good point, because teenagers is, you see bullying on the playground, you see it with young kids. The technology side is catching up to the younger side. But where I see it a lot in the school level is in the cyber world. And there's an anonymity factor that allows those aspects of one's character that are still developing to be expressed in not so nice ways. And, you know, Formspring has been the bane of my existence. I haven't heard a lot about it recently, but there's all kinds of avenues where you can find kids bullying each other. And I just want to talk about that. Actually, let's take a break, and then we're going to come back to that, because I think getting a hold of your kid's cyber world is very important.
Absolutely.
You're listening to The Art of Potential Show with Kristen Heemstra. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra, and I am talking with Nadia Vesu on how to raise emotionally healthy children. So, Nadia, we just left our last segment talking about the cyber world and cyberbullying. And that, as I was saying, as a high school guidance counselor, is where I see a lot of lack of empathy. What is your experience with that?
It scares me, absolutely, as a clinician, and as a parent as well. And then on the same side, I have a husband who is in IT. The technology is changing too fast for adults to keep track of.
Yep.
What has happened is some of the concerning apps that I see is Ask FM, Snapchat. They're designed such in such a way that kids can ask, post things, anything they want without knowing who this is coming from.
Right.
Snapchat is designed to disappear as soon as you've seen it.
Yeah.
So, you know, this whole bullying concept came, we were introduced to it back in, you know, the 60s and whatnot, and it was very much focused on the physical aggression piece.
Yep.
Then we started to see the relational aggression in terms of the girls kind of, we tend to put it on girls, but it can happen both boys and girls and even in adults too. Yep. The trying to isolate others. Oh, you're less than. Oh, ruining kids' self-esteem or whatever sense of self-worth they have. The problem with phones, and I'm going to be pretty direct about this, is parents, you have to be involved in this. You have to monitor this because you're putting a very powerful device in your child's hands, and they cannot and typically do not want to be parted with that.
No, they do not under any circumstances want their phones removed or you to have their password.
And I'm going to say you need to have the password.
You do.
And this also goes back to you have to have lay a foundation of mutual respect with your child, your teenager, so that when things become so intense that they are being cyberbullied, that they can come to you. Because with bullying, you have to call it by its name. You have to take action. And then we're also seeing this concept of, oh, I can't tell. I'm a snitch. And it spreads like wildfire around the school. And it happens in places where the cafeteria, the hallways, you know, where there's not as much adult supervision going on. Cyberbullying, there's none.
Right.
And
there's no supervision.
And if the child has that phone all the time, they can be, it's so intrusive and it's constant. You're looking at a level of victimization and harassment that can damage your child severely. They get in a sense of hopelessness. And there's no way for them to solve this problem.
Right. They're not going to tell you about it because they're not a snitch. Their world is, I mean, and it's, you have to put, this is where parents can have empathy. Imagine you go to work every day, or every day you are surrounded by people who are saying mean things to you. That is your world, you know, and it's like a ganging up on someone mentality.
And it's so painful. A child, you know, a sign to look for, a child not wanting to go to school, isolating themselves in the room. Withdrawal, social withdrawal. It is so important also for kids not to only be focused on school. If that's their only outlet, that's their own. Everything then becomes what everybody says to them at school. And kids are mean. That is part of
growing up.
But if it's constant and if you're looking and they start to believe it, that's scary. And, what you as parents need to do is help them be confident in who they are so that certain things, they're like, you know what? I'm going to brush that off my shoulder because, you know, that's not true. I'm not a loser.
Right.
That foundation is laid before they kind of were getting to middle school and high school. In my opinion, kids should not have their phones 24/7. It is so intrusive. It comes into the... They can't get away from it.
They can't. And I actually, Nadia, you bring up such a very good point. Every night, because kids will take their phones into bed with them to, quote unquote, listen to music. Well, they're not just listening to music. They're texting with their friends. They're doing all this other stuff. So there should be a place where everybody's electronics, the iTouches, the iPhones, the iAnythings, any device, the Nooks, the whatever, can go to sleep. And they all need a bedtime or a cutoff time.
Absolutely.
Where no one can access them. And as parents, that is something we need to do. And we need to do it for ourselves, too.
And I think, you know, like homework time's a big time. You know, at our house, we have a drawer or a little basket.
Right.
And from 4 to 6, the phone's off and it goes there.
Yeah.
You know, it is very important to limit screen time.
Yeah.
It interferes with our ability to go to sleep, and it interferes with the melatonin, which helps us fall asleep, all those bright lights. But you're hearing those beeps, you're hearing all that stuff, you know, they should not take their phones to bed.
No. And they will. They will sneak them in. It's amazing how those phones can be snuck in to almost any place at any time.
And I think that's also where trust, developing a sense of trust and respect with your child goes.
It's a hard one, though, because it's very, you know, it's hard to say to your kid, I totally trust you.
Well,
so give me all of your passwords. You know, there's a mixed message there.
Yeah.
And then you have to say, it's other people I don't trust. Well, that's, you know.
And it's also, you know, giving them, you know, the independence to also make some mistakes and to learn from them. I mean, that's crucial as well.
It is, and that's a tough one, too. And the other thing is, you can have a child who you know to be very respectful, very wonderful, very fantastic, and they are when they're with you. They can have a totally alternate personality going on at school. Believe me, I've worked in education for over a decade, and you would be shocked to see how your little angel changes in a school environment. And it's part of all kids do that. They all act differently at home than there. The same way we act differently at work than we act at home. I mean, that's part of developing your personality. But it is very important when somebody tells you, or even in a nuanced situation, suggest that maybe something isn't right, that you hear that flag and mm-hmm. that you don't just skate over it and say, well, they don't know what they're talking about. At least explore it.
Absolutely. I mean, you can't. The technology is moving so fast and things are getting developed so quickly that it's hard for adults to stay on top of this,
right.
And let alone parents staying on top of what new app they might have.
And what new ones are coming out, because you don't know what's out there.
And as, you know, as one closes down because, you know, people have said, you know, this is inappropriate, the cyberbullying has gotten out of control,
yep.
They're developing another one. And what's scary about it right now is the piece of, I don't know who you are.
Right. And there's also cyber stalking. And that's another thing, because they kids do have public personas out there. And people can look online and see pictures of your kids and then create relationships with your kids fairly easy. And they can pose as 13-year-old girls when really they're not.
And you know, another thing to go back to is educating your kids about being on the internet. And they might actually be better at this than in some of adults, but having an etiquette online, and an awareness of, you know, okay, well, what is information that, you know, is dangerous to post? Like when you take a picture of you and your friends and you post it on Instagram, being aware of, you know, a street sign and, you know, various little factors that can trigger people being aware of your location.
Yeah. Or even what you're doing on Instagram. I've seen, and I'll just flat out say it, I have seen body parts of my students I have no desire to see because somebody brought in a picture that the kid posted on Instagram. I'm like, you know, they bring it to the school because they really don't know how else to handle it, and the parent doesn't want to be responsible for outing somebody else's child, so they're like, well, I'll take it to the school. Well, we really honestly don't want it either. We just want to educate your children. But it is something that needs to be dealt with, and that you do want parents to be aware of, because you want parents to protect their kids and you want them to know what's going on. So anyway, there is that. Nadia, thank you so much for coming in. And if people want to reach you, how would they do that?
You can contact me through my practice's website. It's www.perkinscps.com, or you can reach me via email at vasutherapy.com.
And I'll have all of our contact information on the Art of Potential website. Thank you for listening.